The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony, are you there?
Hi, Booker Tov, Chad. I'm here indeed. How are you doing today?
Good, good, good. Sorry, we just had a slight technical glitch, but that's to be expected. Are you well?
Thank God, I'm well. And before we getting into talking about some of the things that we have to talk about, unfortunately not all good news, I just wondered if the listeners were interested in the fact that the Knesset plenum has voted to approve a new sales tax on sugary drinks in Israel. And the additional tax will apparently amount to approximately 1 shekel per liter of drink, which is about 5 rand, more or less 1 shekel. And even diet drinks are going to be taxed, not quite to the extent of 1 shekel, but apparently up to the amount of 70 agorot per liter, which is about 3 rand 50, more or less equivalent. So this is what they call in the business sugar tax, even though it's being levied upon diet drinks as well, in an attempt to try to discourage people from eating unhealthy food. Now, we know that there has been a precedent taxing so-called unhealthy products in the form of the tax that's levied on cigarettes in particular, but there are also other examples. Now, Israel is following the lead of the UK and perhaps other countries as well in levying a sugar tax.
Well, I think it's necessary, to be quite honest with you. If you look at the pricing models in respect of your pure fruit juices, your healthier drinks, which I think are overpriced, and you look at them in comparison to the drinks that are full of chemicals that do cause issues such as obesity, they do cause type 2 diabetes, there should be some or other way of trying to bring down the healthier stuff and trying to bring up the more dangerous stuff, if one could use the term dangerous. I know people talk about it in parts on their freedom, they can put whatever they like into their body, etc. But also for me, eating clean or drinking clean has become so very expensive that we shouldn't just look at taxing the drinks that are supposedly bad for us. We should find a way of subsidizing the food that is good for us.
So I think that that's the issue, that instead of reducing the prices and encouraging people to eat more healthily, instead they're just discouraging people to eat less healthily by just making the alternatives more expensive. I guess the main argument that people will have here is it up to the government to draw a moral judgment on food and drink? You know, is it their decision as to whether this is unhealthy? Is this an objective across the board agreement that these products that are being taxed extra are indeed unhealthy? Are they unhealthy for everybody? Who's taking the moral high ground in terms of drawing judgment here as to what one should be eating, what is more healthy, and what is less healthy? It's just a rhetorical question that I'm putting out there.
An observation, and it'll close off this topic. My question to you is, if you have a National Health Service and you've seen the cost of obesity and the conditions that come with it, such as type 2 diabetes, then perhaps government does have to play big brother and say, listen, we need to try to put a stop to this, or at least discourage it.
Valid point.
And let's get right to it. Anthony Reich today, some interesting topics we're discussing. The first, very sad, of course, 2 Israeli Air Force pilots were killed last night when a military helicopter crashed off the coast of Haifa. What are the details about this particular incident?
So when the story was breaking last night, it was quite noticeable that they announced that this helicopter had crashed off the coast of Haifa in the dark, that one officer had been rescued and was had light injuries, was being treated in Rambam Hospital in Haifa. And then the condition of the other two crew members on board that helicopter was, as the newspaper announced during the breaking news last night, unknown. And when I saw that one was described as lightly injured and the others were unknown, it kind of already spelt some bad news. It kind of felt as if though they were just trying to buy some time in order to notify the families of the fact that these two crew members had been killed in that accident. And unfortunately, my gut instinct was correct on this occasion, where this morning I've now discovered that in fact the two IDF pilots died in that crash off the coast of Haifa. The helicopter involved is a Panther helicopter, which has been used by the IDF for approximately 25 years. It is not something that's new to the IDF, and it unfortunately is a helicopter that has had problems in the past. I believe that there has been a previous accident involving a similar helicopter. The helicopter in the Israeli Air Force is known as Atalef. That's the helicopter's name given by the Israeli Air Force. Atalef literally meaning a bat, and that's the name that the Air Force decided to use for this particular helicopter when it was acquired approximately 25 years ago. The head of the chief of the Israeli Air Force, Amichai Norkin, has announced that all Atalef series helicopters will be grounded for the time being and that all flight drills will be suspended. The accident yesterday occurred during a training flight, and so the details are not exactly clear whether this was human error or whether this might have been some sort of a technical error. Some anecdotal reports from eyewitnesses at the scene have suggested that the helicopter might have been on fire when it actually crashed into the Sea of Haifa. Some describe something looking like a fireball falling from the sky into the water. So it indicates that there may well have been some sort of a technical issue on board this helicopter before it crashed and unfortunately killed those two Israeli crew members, those two pilots. It's a medium-weight, multi-purpose, twin-engine helicopter. It's been used for all kinds of missions, including search and rescue, ironically. It's been in combat support, and it has done even more than that. And as I've said before, unfortunately, this is already the second crash from a helicopter in this particular fleet. So our condolences do go to the families of the two pilots who were killed. Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has eulogized them, claiming that they are amongst Israel's best, that these are sons of Israel who have given their lives in the service of the security of the State of Israel. And he has extended both the government's and the general public's condolences to the families of the two helicopters. A very, very sad report indeed to have to talk about this morning.
Iran again taking center stage with their threats of revenge for the assassination of General Soleimani. Why suddenly these threats being issued again?
Well, it's interesting that this is suddenly, not suddenly, but again being raised as a big issue. The Iranian president, Ebrahim Raisi, was speaking on the second anniversary of the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani. We will recall that 2 years ago, this was an assassination that was carried out by the United States and proudly announced by U.S. President Donald Trump at the time, stating that the U.S. had succeeded in assassinating General Soleimani. He was somebody who was regarded as highly influential in Iran's presidential guard. And the fact that the Revolutionary Guards are the Quds Force, he was the commander of the Quds Force and was in charge of the Revolutionary Guards. And he was killed, as some might remember, in Iraq. There was a drone strike that was ordered by President Trump that resulted in the death of Soleimani. And it apparently is still a very, very sore point amongst the Iranian regime, to the point that General Ebrahim Raisi has said that if former President Donald Trump and his then Secretary of State Mike Pompeo are not tried in a fair court for the criminal act of assassinating General Soleimani, then, as he claims, Muslims will take our martyrs' revenge. This was the threat issued by President Raisi. And in tandem with that, it was very interesting that the Jerusalem Post website and the Israeli newspaper, the Jerusalem Post, was hacked as well on the day of the anniversary, the second anniversary of that assassination. There was a sort of a picture put on the Jerusalem Post website, effectively an Iranian threat, which said, "We are close to you, where you do not think, where do you not think at all." And also a similar message put up in Hebrew as well. It showed a ballistic missile falling from what appeared to be a representation of the hand of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, of the hand of Soleimani himself, sending this ballistic missile downward. And so clearly this particular incident that took place all that time ago, already 2 years have passed since then, not only is a thorn in the side of the Iranians in terms of the seniority of this individual who was reached by this drone strike, which was engineered by the US, and one understands behind the scenes as well that there must have been some Israeli involvement to some degree, but also the fact that it really hasn't yet gone, and there hasn't been any revenge taken. There's been no reaction, or at least visible reaction, on the part of the Iranians, and we do know that they do like to extract their revenge. They don't like to allow accounts to go unsettled, and so this is a clear indication that the Iranians are not going to allow this particular incident to rest until some type of revenge is extracted. Exactly what the form of the revenge will be remains unknown. It could easily be extracted against Israeli targets, whether they be in Israel itself or potentially against Israeli tourists or Israeli government institutions around the world. It could even be directed towards Jewish communities around the world, where we've seen in the past Iran has taken its revenge, and hence the level of security that remains on a very, very high level surrounding all Israeli and Jewish activities around the world, for fear that Iran may well decide to take its revenge on this particular issue, which is, of course, remains very, very painful indeed. And, you know, even though Iran continues to be very active in a cyber sort of way, trying to hack sites as it did the Jerusalem Post, and trying to find its way into all kinds of systems and websites that are operated by Israeli government and Israeli companies, the real revenge has to be public. It has to be visible. Doing something which is behind the scenes, which is low level, which might have a significant impact but is not particularly visible, I don't think will suffice for the Iranians on this particular account. They have got many other accounts to settle, numerous accounts to settle, of things that have happened over the years in Iran, which seem to have gone unsettled as yet. And one imagines that they're just simply building up this account, and that eventually they will attempt to carry out something a lot more significant. So we continue to be on high alert. Security around the world for Jewish and Israeli institutions also needs to be on high alert. The arm of Iran can reach almost anywhere and will reach anywhere, and we need to be very, very cautious of that.
And in closing, our final topic of the day, Israel has decided to gradually begin allowing the entry of some foreign tourists into Israel as soon as next week. What are these new arrangements, Anthony?
So good news for South Africans who wish to travel to Israel. Two pieces of good news. The first piece of good news is that it has been recommended to the Knesset plenum that South Africa be removed from the list of red countries, along with Canada, France, Hungary, Nigeria, Spain, and Portugal. It has been recommended that those countries be removed from the red list. So that already has an impact of allowing Israelis to travel backwards and forwards with some limitations to those countries that are not on the red list. Secondly, there has been a recommendation made that foreign visitors be allowed to travel to Israel from countries that are not on the red list. So now that it is recommended that South Africa be lifted from the red list, that decision has not been final yet, but it seems inevitable that that will be the case. The next thing is that it seems as if though foreign visitors from those non-red countries will also be allowed to visit Israel, again, under very, very stringent conditions. Everybody has to be vaccinated, fully vaccinated according to protocols established by the Israeli government, which means that they're going to recognize certain vaccines, including the Pfizer and the AstraZeneca and the Johnson & Johnson, amongst others, and that people will need to be able to produce all of the documentation to prove that they have been vaccinated. There's no clear understanding as to whether any quarantine will be required for visitors potentially visiting Israel. But Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has said that while there was a low level of infection rate in Israel, it made sense to close the borders in order to try to prevent the infection rate increasing. Now that we are already diagnosing 5,000-6,000 new infections every day, he said there seems little point in trying to keep foreigners out because the potential impact that they might have on the number of infections in Israel seems to be relatively small, as opposed to when the infection rate was much, much lower. So he has said that lifting the restrictions, although seems counterintuitive, is probably the right thing to do, not only in terms of trying to repair some of the damaged relations between Israel and diaspora Jewry, Israel and non-Jews around the world who wish to travel to Israel for one reason or another, particularly those who have family members who wish to participate in family functions, but also to try to increase the level of the tourist economy, which is so important for Israel and which has suffered so much under the recent pandemic. So it seems as if, though, good news is on the way. It still is not yet passed into law. So I think people need to just be a little patient, wait until the Knesset has made its final decision on this particular matter. But as far as I can tell from what I've read, it seems almost inevitable that within the next week, 10 days, 2 weeks, that those new provisions will finally be passed into law, and that people will be finally allowed to visit here. Unfortunately, the queues for people trying to be tested and the delays in the results of tests in Israel continue. Thousands and thousands of people trying to be tested because of the fact that they suspect that they've been infected. So that still continues.
Well, good news all round. Anthony Reich live from Israel. Karen says, best news, we can go to Israel. And Yair says, yes, South Africa also has sugar tax.